official Adam Sank Show merchandise at adamsank.com. T-shirts, tank tops, mugs, masks, just about everything you can think of emblazoned with the Adam Sank Show logo. Go to adamsank.com to order your merch today. Thank you.
Warning. The program you're about to hear contains highly offensive and indecent material.
This is the Adam Sank Show.
If it's in my hand, I'm going to suck it.
Powered by DNR Studios. And now,
the one, the only, Adam Sank!
Bottom. Surprise, motherfuckers! Welcome back to the Adam Sank Show. We are not live, but this is a brand new episode. If you're listening at 11 a.m. Eastern on Saturday, September 26th, 2020, at dnrstudios.com, the only place you can hear this podcast throughout the week that it first airs. If you listen on any other platform, be a bro, be a cis, be a non-binary. Leave us your ratings and reviews on whichever audio platform you use. Email me, moi, at adam@adamsank.com. Like the Facebook page, download the comedy albums, and most importantly, get your official ass merch. T-shirts, tank tops, masks, even a butt plug for children. The link to all that merch is adamsank.com, and no matter what else you do, most importantly, vitally important, answer the census if it's still happening by the time you hear this episode, and register to vote. The websites for those two things are vote.org and 2020census.gov. Today, at long last, we will finally speak to Finley Games. We've been trying to get him on the show for weeks. He's a really fascinating gay, trans male blogger, vlogger, YouTube star, really charming guy who has been very open and explicit about his journey with phalloplasty, with building a penis where a penis had not been before. And he's really honest and fascinating, and I think you're going to enjoy him. But first, it's time to welcome back everyone's favorite Prince of Pigs, my co-host and partner in crime, Mr. Ryan Frostegg.
Good day.
Surprise, motherfucker.
Surprise, motherfucker.
What's going on?
Oh, life.
Surprise, motherfucker.
Surprise, motherfucker. Surprise, motherfucker. Surprise
now.
Okay.
JB is here as well, playing the sound effects.
Hello.
JB Bursey.
Hello.
Lovely to see you both.
Lovely to see you as well.
You guys, last week's episode was so jam-packed with news. Like, there was a lot of news.
I know. News and nudes.
There was nudes. There was news. There were Jews.
There were Jews.
Quite honestly, there were three Jews on that show. The two of us.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, actually, Ryan's only a half.
That's true.
But Yuval David more than makes up for it because he's super Jew.
You know, fun fact, I had a hookup with an Israeli soldier named Yuval on my birthright trip.
That's delicious.
Yeah.
Is this some audio from that trip?
Yes.
Weren't you like 12?
No, that was when I got my, that was my bar mitzvah trip.
Your birthright trip, you were what?
I was 22? 22.
Israeli men are so fucking sexy, but like thoroughly undateable.
Yeah.
You can't date them or marry them, but you can have a really good time for about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, I want to ask you two something, and this will dovetail with our first story today. Do you consider yourselves to be handy around the house?
No.
Like, oh, define handy, like as in carpentry-wise, like fix stuff.
Yeah, what does handy mean?
Oh, then no, I'm a housewife bitch. I cook.
Me too.
I do a light cleaning.
I don't, very light from what I hear.
No,
Terminator, by the way? Did he ever come back?
No, and that's fine. I'm moving out anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Are you going to stay in Far Rockaway?
No, I'm going to Brooklyn.
Oh my God, that's exciting.
I know, I'm super excited. I'm going to be more closer to my doctors and whatnot.
Where in Brooklyn?
I'm going to say Flatbush Avenue, even though that's not true. But for the listeners, you guys, it's Flatbush Avenue, Brooklyn, in my old hood.
Okay.
Okay.
Congratulations. So you'll be closer to the studio as well.
Yes. I'll be like 40 minutes away now instead of an hour.
I'm so happy.
And 30.
You guys have no idea how far JB has to trek to make it here. I mean, it's like working. It's like living in another state,
oh my goodness,
basically. But, well, congratulations to you. I'm the same as JB. I love to cook. I don't like to clean, but I certainly do it, and mm-hmm. I think I'd make a very good housewife. But when I say handy, also, I mean, like, not just building and fixing, but, like, I can't look at something and be able to figure out how it works right away, like some people can.
Yeah.
Like, Scott and Justin are both very handy.
Yeah.
they can just like look at something like if they get something from IKEA, mm-hmm. they don't even have to look at the instructions. They can just put it together right away.
Well, like Boy Wolf is very handy in that he can kind of say, oh, we need this thing here, but it doesn't exist. So let me build it. You know, like he can create stuff. I feel like I'm not really handy in that way. I've become more handy in the way that you and JB have described, in that like I am cleaning more and cooking more and like, you know, more domestic.
Yeah, that's not handy. Yeah. That's just being like a good domestic
housewife. Yeah, yeah. You mean a good
but I'm
housewife.
Not. Yeah, but I'm definitely Betty not Crocker. Handy in the other
You're
way.
Betty Cocker.
Oh, you know yeah. what? I realize I can. I don't build things. I can make shift stuff, so I don't have to buy new stuff. So I can just. Like, hey, this arm is broken on this chair. It's okay. We'll just take this wood right here, tape this right here, and look at that. Right there. It's there. I did learn some things from carpentry class in theater school.
Yeah, you did. You did like theater craft.
Yeah, so I know
I didn't
how
even
to
do that.
Make
I did
shit
that.
Last.
I'm terrible. But anyway, the reason why I asked this is because I found this article, and I don't know how I found this. I dropped down some rabbit hole. I think I saw a sponsored post on Twitter and clicked on it. Mm. But it's from some random website called brain-sharper.com. And the title of the article is Everyday Items We've Been Using Wrong the Whole Time. And I clicked on it thinking, I'm not going to learn anything new. And I learned so many new things that my mind was blown. And I'm not exaggerating. This article has changed my life.
Mm.
It has changed the way I do basic everyday things. So I'm going to share it with you, the listeners,
oh my goodness.
And you, JB and Ryan, and I think you will be shocked by some of these.
Okay.
Number one, saucepan handles. Have you ever noticed that when you use a saucepan, there's a little hole at the end of the handle?
Yeah.
Do you know what that's for?
For your spoon, for your wooden spoon stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought it was just so you, if you wanted to hang your pots and pans
right.
up. No, that's where you're supposed to put your cooking utensils so that it doesn't mess up the counter.
Yeah, or you get like one of those, my mom used to have, it's like a cup thing and just holds one utensil on the stove.
They're designed so that you can perfectly balance your spoon or your spatula and save yourself the cleanup after.
I
never
so
did this before
God.
In my life. Okay, that's the least interesting one. So prepare yourself.
He's already blown by the first one.
I can't.
Okay, drink cartons. You know when you're pouring yourself, when you open a new, let's say a new half gallon of milk.
Okay.
Right? If you pour it, how do I explain this? If you pour it from the other side of the carton, not the carton, not the part where the hole is, but the other side, the milk will not slosh or splash, and it will be easier to hold the stream steady. In other words, we all instinctively tip the carton using the hole that's closest right. to the glass. It should be the other way around.
Huh. That one's a little bit harder for me to like visualize and understand. But
and this is why I get milk jugs, because that's too complicated.
Right, if you have a jug or a bottle, it doesn't really work. But if you have even, whether it's a big carton or a small carton, even if it's a juice box, you always want to pour with the spout away from the glass, not next to the glass. Here's another one that'll blow your mind. Car headrests.
Mm-hmm.
We all remember being a little kid and we're playing around and we pull that headrest and it comes out.
Yes.
And there's these two little metal spikes.
Yes.
You know what that's for?
What?
In case you get trapped in your car and you have to break a window.
Are you kidding me?
That's why that's there. That's why those come off. That's a safety device.
Oh, I'm pretty sure all the people who fell into a lake in their cars was like, I have no way to get out.
That's
but
right.
you always had that thing in your car. This is why I don't drive by BT Dubs.
Oh,
saying.
My God.
Well, I don't drive because I don't own a car. We live in New York City. But yeah. for the many of you who have cars, I bet most of you didn't know this. You have a life-saving device in your headrest.
But those are not always so easy to get out.
No, but
I mean, I'm glad that it's
your life's on the line.
Yeah,
hey,
yeah.
You're
but,
gonna...
if your life's on the line and you're panicking, you better hope that it comes out right away because otherwise you're gonna show.
Yeah,
but that's cool.
Let me continue to blow your mind,
please.
With regard to aluminum foil boxes.
Oh my goodness!
If you look on the side of just about every aluminum foil box on both sides, you will see a little cardboard cutout about the size of your fingertip, and if you press on that. It will hold the aluminum foil in place so that when you go to tear out a sheet,
it's holding it down.
You don't pull the whole thing out.
Oh, wow.
I had to run over to my drawer to see if this was real.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to even go home and look at this.
My bargain basement dollar store aluminum foil had these two little cutouts on either side, and I pressed them in. They hold the roll in place.
Huh.
Who the fuck knew that?
Me.
Okay, this is... Oh, JB, you knew.
Yes, I did.
Like, how?
Again, I think this is a black person thing, because my mom did it, all my black friends, the parents, the mamas had it. It was always there. I was like, what the fuck?
This is part of the Black Book of Secrets that we're not privy to.
I was like, who did this? Who invented this machinery so the roll don't come out? Because this is good.
Amazing. Okay, here's the one that made my head explode. This is something I do every single day of my life. Every night, I prepare my oatmeal for the next day.
Right.
And part of that is peeling a banana. Well, it turns out we've all been peeling bananas wrong our entire life.
Stop.
How do you peel a banana?
From the top.
Wrong. Turn it over. Peel it from the bottom. The peel literally falls off. There's no strings. You know those little banana strings that always get stuck on the sides of your banana? Those are gone. The thing literally, it's like ripping open an envelope. And the reason why we know this is because that's how monkeys eat bananas.
Oh, my God.
And no one knows more about bananas than monkeys.
But the bananas, you rip the top.
I'm telling you.
You don't need to do
if
that.
If you do it at the bottom.
You just pull it apart.
It falls apart.
Wow.
It's like it's like the peel has no adhesion when you go from the bottom. It blew me away.
That is
I just
really
saw this
wild.
Yesterday, I was watching videos, and it was about this white girl who's watching things you didn't know how to do properly. And it showed the banana thing. I was like, shut.
Did she start screaming? Because I did.
She did. She screamed.
I
fell off.
I was like, I'm 49 years old, and I've been peeling bananas the wrong way my entire fucking life. Okay, this next one I knew. Since I was a child, actually, my dad taught me this, but most people don't know. If you have a glass Heinz ketchup bottle and the ketchup won't come out.
I know this.
Where do you hit it?
The number.
Number 57.
Yep.
There's a little 57 imprinted on the side of the bottle. It's like in the glass itself. If you knock that with your fist, it's exactly the right spot to make the ketchup come out.
I knew that, but I remember as a kid, my dad used to literally stick a knife into those bottles and then like
that's
the ketchup up and then
such
put,
an annoying way to
put
do it
the knife covered in ketchup on a napkin.
Ugh.
I was just like,
he's a monster. No, just knock the number, the side of the bottle where it says 57 for Heinz's 57 varieties.
The only time I've seen glassware in condiments was in restaurants.
You never bought a glass bottle of ketchup?
No, we had tomato, plastic. Everything was plastic.
Well, nowadays, ketchup is mostly, unfortunately, in plastic bottles. But restaurants is when, you're right, that's when like they serve
that's
it to you.
That's usually when you see that.
And you got your hamburger and you want ketchup.
Yeah.
Okay, this next one I actually printed out to show you guys a picture because I was so blown away. The correct way to eat an orange is not to peel it. It is to slice off a little off the top, a little off the bottom, and then unfold it like an accordion.
What?
Look at that.
Mine.
So all of the sections are exposed, and you've got the peel holding it together, and you just peel them right off, and they come off so easily.
So, okay, I get it. So it's like cutting an onion. You cut the
kind
top,
of.
Cut the top part, the bottom part.
But an onion you can't just split open with your hands. This will just, like, it's like spring-loaded. It just pops open, and then you've got this a strip of orange sections ready
to
be eaten.
So pretty much, as soon as you cut off the front and the back, it should just open up.
It should. I mean, you may have to put one more cut on the side to get it started. But yeah, I mean, and peeling oranges is such a fucking pain in the ass. It's like the main reason I don't eat oranges.
Same.
You know, and then you always have those parts where the white stays on it.
Yeah.
And you scrape that off.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a neat trick, but it's not going to apply to most people. Do either of you still own an analog watch?
No.
Like a tick-tick.
What's a watch?
Exactly. Like a tick-tick watch. I haven't worn a watch in years, period.
Right.
And most people who do wear them have either a digital or
Apple Watch?
Apple Watch.
Yeah.
But if you have an old-fashioned watch that you wind up that actually vibrates as it ticks, you can put it under your mouse when you step away from the computer, and then your screen won't constantly keep going back to the screensaver, and you won't have to keep putting in your password every time.
Huh.
This would be great for me for my because I work from home now,
yeah.
and I have a work laptop that literally, if I don't touch the screen for 30 seconds, I have to put a security code in again. So that would be helpful. And I'm sure I could find something else that vibrates.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I bet you could.
Oh, no. I bet you could.
But, yes. So that's a way to keep your computer from going to sleep.
Very cool.
And then this last part, I'm going to assume JB knows because he knew about the hole in the handle. And you knew it. What was the other thing you knew that your mom taught you?
It was the first one that we talked about.
No, but there was another one, too, about... not the headrest. Oh, the aluminum foil. Okay, so did you know this, JB? Next time you're making pasta and it looks like your pot is about to boil over or you're mm-hmm. afraid that it's going to, if you just take a wooden spoon and lay it across the top, it will not boil over.
No.
Mm. You didn't know that one?
I didn't know that one. We never had that issue.
A dry... In the Bercy home, there was never an overboiled pasta pot. A dry wooden spoon destabilizes the bubbles when they come into contact with the water-repelling surface, and this makes the boiling water retreat. The wooden spoon is considerably cooler than the 212-degree Fahrenheit water, and so it works to break the bubbles and makes the foam withdraw.
Huh.
Is this not news you can use?
As Robert Featherstone would say,
we can do this.
This is news we can use.
I don't think we've ever done a more important story on the Adam Sank Show. The bananas alone, not to mention the life-saving headrest.
Yes.
In the car.
Yes. I have learned so much that I will now take out into the world. Thank you, Adam.
You've got to try the banana.
I will.
And the orange. Again, this is brain-sharper.com. I only did my favorites. They had a lot of others, some of which were really stupid. But those were pretty good, I have to say. So kudos to them. Meanwhile, Madonna is going to direct her own biopic.
Oh, girl.
She's been co-writing the story of her life with Oscar winner Diablo Cody, who wrote that movie Juno.
Mm-hmm.
Variety reports the untitled film has landed at Universal Pictures. Madonna said in a statement, "I want to convey the incredible journey that life has taken me on." You know, she does that bullshit English accent.
Yeah.
"As an artist, a musician, and a dancer, a human being trying to make her way in the world, the focus of this film will be my music." Deadline says it's hard to recall another big music biopic directed by its subject, although the surviving members of Queen had a lot of influence in the Bohemian Rhapsody movie.
I did.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah, I saw it with you.
You know, everyone liked that movie except for you.
That's not true. That is not
everyone
true.
Everyone liked it.
Not true.
You guys have this argument every Don't time you bring up Bohemian Rhapsody. Just let you know.
You're canceled. Here's what I say to you.
Wow.
That just came out of me. Mm. No, but I did think of another example of this, sort of. In 1979, Bob Fosse directed All That Jazz. Mm. All That Jazz was a fictionalized version of his life,
mm-hmm.
but it was his life.
Mm.
I mean, it ended with... He just sounded like Myra from Episodes. Mm. It ends with him dying, so it wasn't exactly what happened at that time in his life. But there's an Anne Rankin character. There's a Gwen Verdon character. The main character played by Roy Scheider is obviously Bob Fosse. So maybe it'll be like that. But my feeling about Madonna is she should really stick to what she's good at, which is like singing and dancing and putting on a show.
Can someone hit the bell for me, please?
Yeah.
Thank you.
She's not a good actress, and there's no reason to think she'd be a good director.
Exactly. Like, if she wants to do something about her life, be one of those people who just give approval, who's just there to say, this is okay and this is not okay.
Right.
Like, do that. Don't take jobs from people who are good at their jobs.
Who would you cast?
Oh, such a good question.
As Madge.
You know, if she were in her 20s again, I would say Reese Witherspoon.
Okay.
Because she's short. She's got that sort of pixie thing going on. And she can sing mm-hmm. as well as Madonna or better. We know from Walk the Line.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know enough like 20-something actresses.
Yeah. She's either going to... I think it'll probably end up being an unknown. I feel like she'll do a worldwide search.
Me too.
Yeah.
I did the other night stumble on this horrible movie on one of the cable channels called Madonna and Basquiat. And it's about Madonna's relationship with Jean-Michel Basquiat, uh-huh. the famous artist who died of AIDS or heroin overdose. one of those. Anyway, the woman who played her was so terrible. She didn't look or sound anything like her, and the whole movie was garbage. I couldn't make it through 10 minutes. But, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I'm trying to scan my brain for...
I have a better question. Who would you like to direct the movie? Or, like, who would you like to direct the movie? Like, James Cameron, Tim Burton...
Tim Burton.
Yeah. I would live.
The night before Madonna.
Yeah. She already looks scary. Like Jack Skeleton.
Guy Ritchie.
Oh, my goodness. Guy Ritchie should direct it, and it'll just be called Cunt. I mean, if you give me the choice of any director, I'm going to say, like, Martin Scorsese, you know, someone amazing like that.
Yeah.
Or,
I think it would probably be. A female director. I could see
Amy Heckerling.
Sure.
Would be fantastic.
Sure.
Okay. In other news, this story was sort of surprising. You'll remember in 2017 when Anthony Rapp came forward and said that when he was a teenager, Kevin Spacey basically tried to have sex with him. Rapp was only 14 at the time. They were appearing in a play together, and he attended a party at Spacey's apartment. He says that Spacey, then aged 26, touched his butt, laid on top of him, and made it clear he was interested in having sex with him. And that's what started the downfall of Spacey's career, because then all these other guys came forward with similar stories. Well, now Anthony Rapp is suing Kevin Spacey over the alleged sexual assault and misconduct that took place in the 80s. It's kind of hard to... It's kind of hard to see the rationale behind this. I don't think he's going to have much of a case.
Yeah.
This was, you know, 40 years ago almost.
Right.
Statutes of limitations?
There is a statute of limitations, and also, like, he didn't really assault him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. Butt grabbing, I don't know if you can actually win a lawsuit for grabbing someone's butt. There was no allegation of rape.
Right.
Or fondling or penetration of any kind. I'm not saying it wasn't, like, traumatic for Anthony Rapp. I'm glad he came forward.
Well, is that why he's suing him, like, for trauma? Or, like what is the...
basis of the lawsuit?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Psychological damage. Anything.
Thank you, Ryan. The lawsuit says Rapp sustained psychological injuries, including but not limited to severe emotional distress, humiliation, fright, anger, depression, and anxiety, a severe shock to his nervous system that has caused him mental anguish, emotional and psychological damage as a result thereof, and upon information and belief, some or all of these injuries are of a permanent and lasting nature. Now, at the same time, a second plaintiff, referred to only as CD, we can speculate on what that stands for.
Cock Destroyer.
He's an accuser. He claims that he engaged in oral and anal sex with Spacey in the early 80s when he was just 12. He says he met Spacey in 1981 at an acting class that Spacey was giving. He met him when he was 12. He ran into him a couple of years later. Spacey invited him to his apartment where they engaged in sexual acts, including, but not limited to, the plaintiff performing anal intercourse on the defendant and oral sex. I guess the plaintiff, the 14-year-old, fucked Spacey? Is that what he's saying? I think that's true.
Maybe, yeah.
So Spacey is a bottom. It also alleges sexual battery, saying Spacey is not funny. Says Spacey tried to sodomize the 14-year-old without consent, but the boy resisted the attempt. So yes, Spacey wanted to swap, but in the end, he was only fucked by the boy. Both men are seeking, both CD and Anthony Rapp are seeking unspecified compensatory and punitive damages against Spacey. Spacey has not issued any response to the latest lawsuit. After Rapp came forward originally with his allegations against Spacey, several other men made accusations of sexual misconduct against the actor. Two men launched lawsuits, which were subsequently dismissed in court or dropped last year. One plaintiff declined to testify when the case reached court, and the other died ahead of his case reaching court. Spacey has repeatedly defended himself against those charges.
before we move on to the next story, which I see here on the rundown, I am realizing that last week we skipped another important story that is similar to the one we were about to do.
Oh, about Chris Evans?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how I skipped that. You're right. So let's first just raise a glass to Chris Evans, Captain America, accidentally showing his cock to the world. JB is lifting his coffee cup.
I don't think it was an accident because nowadays it can't just accidentally happen. Like this is a Tyler Posey situation. Now
who?
Now Tyler Posey, he's the Teen Wolf actor who had his dick pics released accidentally after sending them to a girl. We are past this time now where we know where our dick pics are going.
Well, he didn't share the pic by itself. He shared a screen grab of his phone, right? Of a series of, like, you know when you can look at kind of little thumbnails of all your pictures?
Yes.
He shared that, and one of the thumbnails was his cock.
Wasn't it that he was like, you know when you can record your phone, like you can...
Yeah, screen record.
A screen record. He was like doing something, and then he went to that page. Like, it wasn't even like he shared that.
Someone, I think it was clearly accidental.
Yeah, I think it was an accident too.
But the dick was hot.
Ugh.
And then it turned out that his young... Who knew that Chris Evans had a gay brother who was also an actor named... I don't have it in front of
Scott
me.
Evans?
Scott Evans. Thank you. Who was on a soap opera and has been in films. And so Scott Evans gets on Twitter the next day and is like, I was off social media yesterday. Did I miss anything? Then Chris Evans finally addressed it himself. He tweeted, now that I have your attention, vote.
Yes.
So they both handled it well. And then it turned out that Scott Evans had his own dick pic scandal back in 2013. His nudes were leaked and his dick is also fantastic.
I realize how hot Scott Evans is.
He's hot.
Yeah. Young. I mean,
and they both have nice dicks.
Yes.
So I say share away. Now there was some discussion over the fact that we're not supposed to be sharing people's nudes that they didn't want out there. That
right.
If we wouldn't do it to a woman, we shouldn't do it to a man. I don't really care.
Fuck it. I care because here's my opinion. We've been sexually objectified women for years. It's time for the men to get it too. It's not. We should not be dozing over this and be like, oh well, it just happened to women, so let's not give it to no one else. No, everyone gets a turn at this. The fuck.
Yes, but the principle still holds that, you know, if someone says, hey, I didn't mean to share this, please don't share it. We should respect them. That said, I don't think Chris Evans has truly been hurt in any way by everyone knowing that he has a big, thick, meaty cock.
Yeah. And also, he then, you know, the way that he spun it into making it something...
Yeah, he made it something great.
Yeah.
Also, it may not have been his dick. We don't even know.
I know. It's crazy.
There was an actress who tweeted, I can't remember who she was, but she was like, listen... She's like, my female friends and I used to always share pictures of, like, tits and pussies with each other that we saw online. Like, hey, I'd love to have these tits. She goes, if you looked at my phone, you would think these were my nude pics, but they aren't. So who knows? It'd be even hotter if he was somehow saving other guys' dick pics. But anyway, all of this goes to say that the Huffington Post has just won a lawsuit with regard to a John Hamm dick pic. Mm. This lawsuit has nothing to do with John Hamm, actually. Like, he wasn't a party to the lawsuit. This was between Huffington Post and a paparazzi photographer named Lawrence Schwarzwald, who took one of the Hammaconda photos that was widely circulated. You know that John Hamm has a big, thick cock.
Member.
And he tends to parade around wearing tight pants without underwear. And so there's a lot of these. And one of the most famous Hammaconda shots was taken by Lawrence Schwarzwald. Well, then the Huffington Post showed a picture, showed that same picture on their website, but they put an image over it that said image loading. Like,
yeah.
Loading.
Yeah. Oh.
It was a cum joke, basically. And so Schwarzwald sued HuffPo and said they used his shot without permission and without payment. But a Manhattan federal court ruled in Huffington Post's favor, saying that the photo was protected by the fair use doctrine. There was a kind of a funny quote from the judge. Sorry, guys.
John Hamm is in my dream celebrity orgy alongside Christopher Maloney, Idris Elba, and there's one other person I'd want in there.
That's a hot orgy.
Idris Elba is also in Mines too.
Yeah.
I don't know that I want to have a celebrity orgy. I think I'd want to just have one at a time so I could really focus. Yeah. Like if I had John Hamm, I'm not going to want to be distracted by anyone else.
Well, I
want to focus on that Hammaconda.
I would be the bottom, and it would be like kind of like a gang. So I just have to focus on, you know, just taking D.
Oh, my dream is to have them on different days so I can enjoy the so I can enjoy them to the fullest and have 24 hours to figure out what in their world gets them off. And it's going to be a fun experience.
Very nice.
That's my dreams, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
Well, the judge said that HuffPost's use of the picture was transformative. Their because their version employed a superimposed box, photo caption, and a title, which together fundamentally transformed the character and purpose of its use. We feel bad for the paparazzo for losing the lawsuit, but it's a victory for the free press and for John Hamm's cock.
Yeah. Hammaconda.
Meanwhile, down in Atlanta, they have a circuit party every year called the Peach Party. This has to be relatively new because when I lived there in the early 90s, we didn't have this. We had something called Hotlanta, which I think is now gone. But anyway, you would think that this year, amid surging coronavirus cases in Georgia, they would have canceled the Peach Party. But no, it happened Labor Day weekend. This happened at a bar that was there when I was there called The Heretic. We used to call it The Hairy Dick, kind of the Atlanta version of The Eagle. And The Heretic had already been blamed for fueling an outbreak of coronavirus earlier this year. But people were crammed in. There are pictures of what looks like hundreds of partygoers without masks, without following social distancing guidelines, just partying it up like COVID doesn't exist. So
I just don't get it. I mean, I get the urge to, you know, people want to return to normalcy, but that's just not reality. We're not there. We're not even close to being there. And like, I don't know. It's also for us being in New York. Like, I think New Yorkers, for the most part, we've just taken this
seriously. Here. Everyone.
And you can see based on the numbers that it's worked. And like, you know, so
every day we're still below 1%.
These
red states that pretend it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Or it's not real.
Yeah.
And they think wearing a mask, it like violates their constitutional rights or whatever. It just surges. And now there's a second wave in Europe and it's going to come here too.
Yep.
We can stop this.
I know.
We can literally stop this virus and make it go away if we all just put on a fucking mask and stop partying for a minute.
Put your fucking mask on.
Surprise, motherfucker. Meanwhile, the White Party, which is one of the biggest circuit parties in the world in Palm Springs, has been postponed until 2021. It's usually in October, but it attracts up to 30,000 revelers, making it the biggest gay dance festival in the world. But as COVID began to escalate and the California proved to be a hotspot, the event was pushed back. And now Jeffrey Sanker, who is often mistaken for me, the creator and organizer of the event, has posted a notice saying that because of the ongoing restrictions, the event will now not be happening until 2021.
Sanker? I barely even know her. So dumb.
He wrote, "With the unpredictable changes in health guidelines surrounding COVID-19, which we respect and are taking seriously, my biggest concern is the safety of our attendees and the people of Palm Springs." People really have gotten my name wrong in articles and called me Adam Sanker. I'm like, I'm not related to Jeffrey Sanker. I wish I were. All current ticket holders will have their passes automatically transferred to the 2021 festival. So thank God for a little bit of sanity out in California, if not in Atlanta. Meanwhile, Ryan, I thought this story would appeal to you.
Yes, speaking of
actually,
being handy.
To you and JB. A San Francisco leather bar called the Lone Star Saloon has raised money for itself because it's been severely hurt by the pandemic through something called a Sit on My Face fundraiser. basically, this offered patrons the chance to have their name and face laser etched on the legs of the bar stools at a cost of $250 per leg. Apparently, they sold out very, very quickly. They have a total of 12 stools, so it's not a big bar, which means 48 legs, and they sold all of them at $250 each. So now people can sit on the faces of those who donated.
See, I was more excited when I first heard about it, and then when you told what it actually was, I got really disappointed. So,
well, my first thought, which I knew was not COVID friendly, I was thinking more of like a dance-a-thon where it's just like you sit on someone's face for 24 hours.
No, I was really actually thinking about that,
Ryan,
too.
Or how disgusting would that be? You know what's going to happen in 24 hours. Your ass is going to become very rank.
Well, not for me, but, you know, there's someone out there that would participate. But this is a great cause, and yeah, this is much more sanitary. And
I mean, no, because like going back to Ryan's idea, like what if they already put the flyers and the people are participating didn't eat anything for 24 hours? Like,
you can't have a fun. We just talked about how irresponsible it was.
I said this is not COVID friendly. This is like a completely. This is in the future. We can make this happen.
The Lone Star owner said, "We've been closed for 6 months now, and we're starting to feel the pinch." God. With this in mind, we have set up the Lone Star Saloon 500 Club. Our loyal customers can become a member by purchasing a handmade key strap. Each key strap is individually numbered and the limit is set at 500. When all this shit is over and we reopen, members of the Lone Star 500 Club will receive entry to the club for a year, 2 free annual beer busts, and a bunch of stuff we haven't even thought of yet. So basically, they're selling VIP memberships now to raise money. And listen, businesses are doing whatever they can. They're coming up with lots of creative ways to survive. Yeah. We're about to finally reinstate indoor dining in New York City. I think it's tomorrow, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Wait, maybe not. I thought it was the 30th.
I thought it was the 20th. But in any case, some restaurants here have been closed since March with no outdoor dining because they just weren't able to accommodate outdoor dining. And so we are struggling.
Yeah.
Finally, as far as the news portion of our show goes, we have an actual Pride update. Hit it, JB. We haven't heard this in so long.
Love is sitting on my face.
It is sitting on my face for 24 hours at a time. It stinks. Okay, so the Greater Palm Springs Pride Parade is going to happen on November 7th, but it's going to look very different. It is now a caravan parade.
Caravan.
The mayor or someone whose last name is DeHart says, not DeButt, DeHart. He says the car caravan is going to be a very unique pride parade for Palm Springs. We certainly anticipate it's going to be the largest caravan we've ever seen in the city. The new plan, which usually draws thousands of participants, puts the same individuals from one household in one vehicle with an option for them to dress up in costume and make posters. There will be no walking participants. This is a 5-mile route through Palm Springs. That's approximately triple the length of the traditional parade route. Other changes include the annual Palm Springs Pride 5K run walk, which will become a virtual event. And Pride organizers plan to fly a 30 by 50 foot rainbow flag over the parade. So, yeah, I mean, listen, it's going to happen. It's better than canceling Pride altogether.
Yeah.
And in California, you've got car culture. People are used to sitting in their cars all the time. So they'll be able to celebrate Pride this way. All right. Where's my rundown, ladies and gentlemen? Okay. So a couple weeks ago, we tried very hard to speak to trans blogger and vlogger Finley Games out in Sussex, England. We failed miserably. So after literally a dozen tries, I was able to call him from home and pre-recorded an interview with him. So here now, finally, is my interview with Finley Games.
Our guest today is a blogger and YouTube celebrity who, since 2011, has been sharing his journey as a gay trans man undergoing gender confirmation surgery. Here's a video he posted to YouTube in April 2018.
I've had a lot of problems with the hookup part of my lower surgery. And in response to all my sharing about that, I've had a lot of questions lately as to if I regret having phalloplasty. Oh my God, no. No way, I seriously do not regret it at all. Yes, this is frustrating. Yes, I want to be able to pee normally. Yes, I want my third stage done. Yes, I want a life where I don't have to be recovering from surgery or waiting for surgery anymore. It is really, really frustrating. But the payoff is I've got a lovely penis and I love him. It's one of those things that only trans folk really get, that although it seems like I made a choice to have lower surgery, there really wasn't any choice. When the choice is between gut-wrenching, anxiety-provoking, low mood-inducing dysphoria and painful surgery, I go for the painful surgery every time. Dysphoria is horrible. And surgery is a cure for that dysphoria, or at least a way to lessen that dysphoria.
And joining us all the way from across the pond in Sussex, England, please give a warm-ass welcome to Finley Games. Finn, how are you?
Hi, Adam. I'm really well. It's really good to hear you.
It's great to hear you, and we both know how difficult it was to achieve that.
Yeah, very much so. This has been a hard-won interview.
But I'm thrilled that we both stuck it out, because I've been wanting to talk with you for some time now, because for nearly a decade, you've documented your journey with phalloplasty. And as cisgender people, we've been taught not to ask trans folks questions about any gender confirmation procedures that they may or may not have had. Why did you decide to be completely open about the surgeries that you've had?
That's a really valid question. I'm so glad you said that, because you're right. I mean, we shouldn't be asking any trans people about their genitals. We've moved on from that. Back in the day, when any trans person was interviewed, it was usually the question, have you had the surgery, rather than asking them about themselves.
Right.
And so for me to speak quite openly, you know, it's, I always make sure to say that caveat that it is a trans person's choice to do this. And I'm choosing to. Because for me, when I started my phalloplasty journey, there was just no information. And so I've always made it my mission to create the kind of content that I wish I had access to. So the content I make is primarily for trans people who are looking to have surgery. Because apart from the medical information, that lived experience, what it's like, is something that's so valuable to anyone who's trying to make the decisions about such a big surgery.
That's interesting. I mean, it makes sense that you're making this for trans people, not for cis people. And yet, I'm sure you're aware that you have many, many cisgender people watching the videos and reading your blogs. What do you hope that we take from it?
Well, this is why, I mean, when I share, I mean, if you're quite familiar with my YouTubing, I talk very much from the lived experience. So I never talk about genitals for genitals' sake. I explain the surgery, but I really drop into that experience of what is it like to not have genitals that you relate to that make you feel physically awful? What is it like to not be able to be intimate with somebody because your genitals are incorrect? And it's that experience that I think it's so vital for cis people to understand, that it's not just about kind of the fascination of the penis, but actually understanding what it's like for us to go through this experience and why surgery like this is so life-changing for trans people.
I know there's no simple way to sum up everything that you've had done, because it's been going on for years, but can you try and tell us in a nutshell, no pun intended, what you've had done and what goes into building a penis where there wasn't a penis before?
Right, let's give you a fly-by view of a penis in creation. Right, so typically, there's this, actually two main kinds of surgery. And within those two main kinds, there's lots of different options within them. But to make it simple, I've had phalloplasty using a graft, skin graft, from my arm. That skin graft creates the penis. And over three separate surgeries, three main things happen. First stage, your penis was created from that graft on your arm. The second stage, your urethra pipe is lengthened and stands to pee. And in the third stage, you have an erectile device, one kind of pump action,
Finn,
where you can get an erection.
I'm sorry, you're just breaking up slightly. The last thing I heard you say clearly is the second stage is lengthening so that you can stand to pee.
Yes, they lengthen the urethra pipe so that you can actually stand to pee. And then the final stage is a erectile device so that you can actually get an erection and have penetrative sex.
And see, to me, this was very eye-opening because I had always believed or been told that, you could build a penis for a trans man, but he would not be able to actually have penetrative sex with it. And in fact, that's not right. You can have penetrative sex with your penis.
No, I mean, they've been doing this surgery now. I mean, the first one was done in 1946. And this new technique using the free flap has been running since the early 90s, including using the erectile devices, which are actually used for cisgender men as well for kind of erectile dysfunction and things like that. So, yeah, absolutely. And there's a couple of different options for erectile devices. Okay, not every trans person chooses it, but yes, it's absolutely possible.
Now, when you say an erectile device, is that inside the penis? Is it external to the penis? What is that device?
It's inside the penis. So I work a little bit like pump action. There is one cylinder that goes through the penis, and then there's a cylinder that goes into the lower abdomen that has a little kind of reservoir of saline solution. And then in one of the testicles, there's a pump and a release valve. So to get an erection, I pump my testicle, which makes my boyfriend wince, and then that lets the saline solution into the cylinder, causing the penis to get erect. And then there's a tiny little button I press to then deflate that when, yes, at the end.
It sounds fun. I mean, it sounds kind of like you have a built-in sex toy.
It's amazing. I mean, I finished my surgery 2 years ago. So for me, I've only been able to get an erection for 2 years. So I'm 46, going on about 16, 17 right now, this is a brand new body. So yes, there is a lot of that.
You're starting to break up again. Wherever you were situated at the beginning of the interview, that was perfect. I don't know if you've moved at all.
Say that again, Adam, you broke up then.
Yeah, you were very clear at the top of the interview. I don't know if you've moved.
Right.
Locations, but if you could go.
No, I'm in the same place. I've not moved a muscle.
So maybe we're just getting, weather over the Atlantic here.
Maybe.
Finn, we talk about sex a lot on this show. And in fact, I'm someone who asks cisgender people about their genitals all the time. So it's nothing new for me. But I think the number one question I have is, can you have an orgasm with the penis or any kind of orgasm? And if so, how does it feel? How is it like a cis male orgasm? How is it different?
Well, this is the thing, you see, because I only know my body and I don't know the other experience, but absolutely, yes. And this is one of the reasons why a lot of people are concerned about surgery, because, the idea of losing sensation, the ability to orgasm, pleasure, is terrifying. But actually, the surgery has come a really long way now. And what happens is that they transplant nerves into the penis from the arm, which then get hooked up so that you actually develop over time an erotic and tactile sensation, and that gradually comes back. So yes, I get happy like any other man, and I can achieve orgasm, and it's better than it ever was. A lot of that is also because I'm more comfortable with my body, of course, as well. So yes, it works in every way. It gives pleasure in every way too.
It's just so fantastic, and but there's no ejaculate, right?
No, that's a good thing. I'm not messy.
That is a good thing, actually. I'm not a fan of cum, so it would be perfect
for
me.
No, me too.
So, if I may ask, what happened to the clitoris that you were born with? Is that part of the new penis?
There is different options for this, and different countries do different things, and there's always experiments happening. But over here in the UK, what I've had done is I've had mine buried. So they literally strip it right back and it just under the skin. The idea of this is that if you don't get enough sensation in the penis, you can still stimulate the buried clitoris and orgasm. But I don't need to do that because the nerve is growing back enough that I just use my penis and I don't have to worry about anything else. Because what they actually do when they hook up the nerve thing is they hook up a nerve from your arm on the back of the clitoris and then down through the penis itself. And over years, that nerve will grow and go through the skin and increase more sensation.
It's so fascinating.
Fantastic. It's amazing, really.
Now, Finn, when you say arm graft or skin graft on your arm, people probably imagine a rather small patch of skin, but I've seen the videos. You had basically the skin of your entire forearm removed, correct?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this is another reason why it's such a difficult surgery and why so many trans men weren't having it, because to lose a whole portion of your forearm is not an easy thing. You know, it's one hand having lots of dysphoria, really wanting, but then to have to live with a scar that you can't really know how well it will heal. I mean, I've been very lucky with mine. Mine healed really well, and I've actually had it tattooed now to hide it. But yeah, it's a whole entire forearm.
I've heard you say in one video that you have no feeling in your forearm from like your knuckle all the way to the elbow. It's just numb. Is that still the case?
Yeah, I can feel my hand, but from my knuckle on my wrist up to just below my elbow, it's pretty numb. There's some little areas that I got sensation. I can still pressure, but not any direct touch. So, yeah, I mean, this is the thing with this surgery. There are, of course, where there are positives and there's gains, there are also losses as well.
These surgeries, these are serious business. These are not for the faint of heart or for those who can't handle pain. And also, I have to think they're incredibly expensive. But you have said that everything you've gone through is worth it compared to the pain and struggle of gender dysphoria. And I...
Oh, absolutely.
Go ahead.
I mean, but that's the thing, you see. The pain of being without a penis was so much greater than any fear of surgery. And now to have gone through and completed an arm scar, the numbness, that pales into insignificance now. Because having a body is free from dysphoria. Having a body that I can touch myself and feel good about, I can be naked, I can be intimate. I couldn't be intimate with people before, I couldn't work out my sexuality. That freedom, oh my goodness, it's a price worth paying for a bit of a numb arm. It doesn't bother me at all with the gains I've got.
How much say did you have in the size of your new penis? Because, honey, if it were me, I would have asked for the monster version.
Yeah, this is always a common question. Unfortunately, we are a bit limited. If they make them too big, then the erectile device won't fit. And also, there's a lot of urethra pipe rehooked, and that is the most problematic part of the surgery.
Say that last part again. I'm sorry, you broke up.
When they're rerouting the urethra tube, it's a very problematic area of surgery that can go wrong. So if you've got a penis too long, that's too much urethra to reroute. So they don't like to make penis that are too lengthy. They like to cap them at no more than about six
inches.
I mean, it's what you do with it, isn't it?
Six centimeters or 6 inches?
Inches, 6 inches.
Oh, good. Now, I know that in the UK, most guys are uncut. Did they build a foreskin for you?
No, they didn't. I mean, it's a bit complicated to do that. So most phalloplasty businesses have the circumcised look.
If a trans person out there is listening, a trans man, and, you know, hasn't done anything yet but is really wanting to explore his options, how does he start? What's the first step for him, other than watching your videos?
I think I took a year out to really reflect on what I needed, and I had some help with a therapist to work through it, because there are risks involved. There are still chances that you can be left with love the sensation. You've got to kind of work through all of these. I always say that you need to kind of be very honest about your expectations. So sit and work out what it is you'd really like to get from a penis. Work out what you might be willing to sacrifice, such as scarring and so forth. Really kind of work through that really fine with somebody who can sit and help you work out through both options. I think that's the best advice to give anyone. And always, this is why I share so honestly, because there's so little information that we need to hear other people's lived experiences to understand if that would then help us.
God, I wish the audio were better because I'm fascinated by what you're saying and every other word is mm-hmm. dropping out. We're going to have to try this again in the future when you're in New York City and we can have you in the studio.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But in the time remaining... Go ahead.
Say that again. Oh, you've broken up now.
I was just going to say in the time remaining, we're going to play a silly little quiz show that we do with all of our guests. It's called Ask Me No Questions. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right, here are your questions. Do you enjoy eating bangers and mash?
Absolutely.
Have you named your penis? And if so, what is his name?
He's just Finn Jr.
That's nice. Finn Jr.
Yeah.
I call mine Adam Sr. because he rules me. Who is your favorite porn star?
Oh, I don't know. I just watch whatever makes me happy.
You don't have a particular guy that does it for you?
No, not at all. My boyfriend.
Oh, that's sweet. How long have you guys been together?
2 years, and it feels like 70 million, but in a good way.
That's great. What's his name?
Chris.
Shout out to Chris. Okay.
Yeah, he gets really awkward with all of this, but he's used to it because he's in my Falapasti memoir, so he's going to have to get used to it.
Do you have a game in England called F, Marry, Kill?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so this is an F, Marry, Kill British Beefcake edition. Here are your choices. Okay. Idris Elba, Orlando Bloom, Tom Hardy.
Oh, dear. Yeah. So, Tom Hardy, kiss, Orlando Bloom, marry, and the other one, I can't remember.
Idris Elba.
I feel sorry for him because I'm going to kill him.
You're going to kill Idris Elba. You're going to marry Orlando Bloom if you can get him away from Katy Perry, and you're going to fuck Tom Hardy.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm sorry. The correct answer was marry Idris Elba. Fuck Tom Hardy and kill Orlando Bloom, but you came very close. Who is your least favorite trans celebrity?
Oh, I'm going to refrain from answering that, I think. I think they all do a good job in their own way.
Very safe answer. We will accept that. What do you hate most about Americans?
That it's so far away and I can't visit.
Oh, that's sweet. I'm sure there are other things you hate more. Finn, you're from Sussex. What are your thoughts on the Duchess of Sussex, Meghan Markle?
Say that again?
Given that you're from Sussex, what are your thoughts on the Duchess of Sussex?
Oh, that's just a whole minefield, isn't it? It's just ridiculous, the two of them.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
I call her the Duchess of Butt Sex.
Do you?
What's been more painful, phalloplasty or having to answer these stupid questions?
I didn't hear that again, sorry.
What has been more painful for you, phalloplasty or having to answer these stupid questions?
Answering these stupid questions when this silly line doesn't work properly, definitely.
Exactly. Finley Games, you are... delightful. Thank you so much for being on the show. Your website is finleygames.com. Your YouTube channel is Finn with two N's, the Invincible, not the Invincible,
yes.
The Invincible. And
absolutely.
I understand you have a book coming out. Tell us about that.
I do. It's called Top to Bottom, and it's publishing in April 2021 with Jessica Kingsley Publishers. you get to find out all about phalloplasty, all about that experience of a trans man getting to know his genitals.
Fabulous. So we will have our listeners be on the lookout for that. And again, thank you so much. I know this has been terribly inconvenient, and it's as hard to hear me as it is for me to hear you, but you've been a great sport. So we're going to have you back on the show, either in person or with a better phone connection.
Wonderful, Adam. I've loved talking to you, even though it's been difficult. Absolutely.
Thanks, Finn. Best wishes to you. I also want to thank my co-host, Ryan Frostig, and JB. Please join us next week for another fabulous episode of The Ass. Our guest is TBD, but it's going to be someone wonderful. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam Sank. Subscribe to this podcast at dnrstudios.com. Have a great week, bitches. Bye.